Up next on Opening Move, host Scott Mace speaks with Javier Saltero, the CEO of Hyperic, who talks about moving his product from a perpetual commercial license to the GPL. From Open Source Conversations on the Gigavox Media Network.
Welcome to another episode of Opening Move. I'm Scott Mace. My guest today is Javier Saltero. He's the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Hyperic, which recently open-sourced its flagship product, HQ. Javier, why did you decide to open source, and what's the history of this?
So we had this product that we built in 2003 was when we actually first shipped it at our previous company, Covalent Technologies. And we had actually acquired that technology and spun a whole company out of it called Hyperic. And when we did that, we knew all along that we wanted it to become the most widely adopted management platform. And we felt that open source was the right vehicle for doing that. But before we actually went and released a whole bunch of code, we chose to kind of incubate, if you will, the product for a longer time, work with customers, deploy it more aggressively. Once we hit that point, we then basically embarked on the process of figuring out what the business model behind open sourcing this technology was going to be. And so we've executed that as of earlier this year.
So what were the twists and turns along the way? Did you have different business models you considered? Was it pretty clear how you were going to do this all along, or has it been kind of a trial and error?
Actually, we had it figured out from the beginning. When we spun out of Covalent, Covalent was selling this product as a traditional enterprise software solution with perpetual licensing and pretty high price tag, et cetera. So when we spun off Hyperic, what we wanted to do was begin the process of changing that and taking some steps that made the company actually work more like an open source business than a commercial or traditional enterprise software one. Among these things was the idea that you would charge or license a project through a subscription rather than through perpetual licensing, and that instead of having an aggressive sales force basically forcing the product down people's throat, that you'd look for people who were actually experiencing the problems we solve and offer them a product they could actually download directly through the web, get deployed very quickly, et cetera. So that was phase one, I guess, which we operated under as a completely bootstrapped and profitable company until earlier this year when we decided to complete that transition and actually release the code.
Now, you released the code in July. It's been about 2 months now. How many downloads have you had so far?
We've had about 15,000 downloads, actually, which has been fantastic. We found that the product's being received very well, and people understand what it does. And we have not just downloads, but actually people participating in the process. I think one of the interesting elements of the community process is when you first see a community member that doesn't work for Hyperic answer somebody else's question. And so we saw that pretty early on, and that's pretty exciting.
How many of those downloads have been translated into revenue so far?
I don't know that I can share that. I think the interesting bit here is that some people are actually skipping the open source process. We've continued to acquire new customers, but I can't say that there's a direct correlation between the fact that they downloaded the product and the fact that they've decided to become customers. Some people have, interestingly enough, skipped that process and jumped directly into our enterprise subscription under the premise of, well, we understand the product is open source. We'd like to buy it because the subscription offering seems more appealing. We want support, et cetera.
Which open source license did you choose to release under?
The GPL version 2.
Was that ever in doubt? Did you consider Apache or other licenses?
We considered the LGPL license. With the Apache license, which is something we're very familiar with given our history with the Apache Foundation, our co-founder Doug McEachran being the author of Mod Perl and such, it was a little bit less clear on what the business model was going to be if we were going to just have this product, which had some very sophisticated and very, frankly, competitive technology, be put in a license that was difficult to really control or build a business around. So LGPL was the alternative. The reason why we didn't choose the LGPL was because there's some clarity issues between the LGPL and Java that we weren't very comfortable with, and so instead we actually have a GPL license, but we did some very interesting things. We actually carved out an exclusion, or I don't know what the legal term is, but there's basically an exception, two exceptions in fact, on our GPL code. If you build a plugin for HQ, in other words, if you build a connector to manage a product or a specific technology of yours, the GPL doesn't sort of carry over into that plugin. You're not forced to donate that back. Also, if you build a client to our application using our client development kit, that also does not translate into a sort of derivative work, if you will. And so it actually treats the HQ product as more of a black box, where if you make a modification inside it, the GPL provisions take place and you are required by the license to actually contribute that back. But if you're operating outside of it, then you're not necessarily obligated to do so.
Why was Java a factor? Are you written in Java?
Yes, we are. The product is about 98% Java.
Tell me and tell our listeners what exactly HQ does.
Okay, HQ is a platform for managing web infrastructure. And what it does is it actually auto-discovers and monitors all your hardware, software, and services throughout your enterprise.
And what does it compete with? What are some of the popular commercial products or even other open source products it competes with?
There's actually a whole number of them. On the commercial side, it competes with a number of different products ranging from what are referred to as the big four, Tivoli's and OpenView's and such. Although those products actually aren't direct competitors because they're not as focused on web infrastructure and web-based applications as we are, or, you know, the type of technology that's being more aggressively deployed today. Throughout that, there's also, within the Microsoft world, you could argue that it competes with Microsoft's MOM, or the Operations Manager product, and we're providing a solution that allows people that are running Microsoft environments and plus other things to manage from a central point. Ironically, this is probably one of the most interesting pieces. We open sourced a bunch of Microsoft-specific management technology, and Microsoft and open source is a pretty unique angle. From an open source perspective, one of the projects that is most known is Nagios, obviously, which is in a sense, it's competitive in the sense that it monitors also, but it's actually quite complementary. We have a number of customers that have augmented their Nagios setups by having HQ essentially integrate into that and move seamlessly from one product to the other.
And give me an idea who some of the customers are.
Sure. We have customers ranging from large financial institutions, whose names I unfortunately can't mention, to folks like Ask Jeeves, eHarmony.com, Ogilvy & Mather, which is a very, very large advertising agency, and National Semiconductor, Toro. I mean, a whole variety of very interesting customers.
So there are two aspects to open sourcing that occur to me that you can leverage now that you are open source. One is a marketing aspect, just getting the word out about the product, and the other is sort of the software quality aspect. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about both of those and what you've seen so far?
Sure. I'll talk about the software quality piece first. HQ, when we open sourced it, was actually a pretty robust product altogether. It had been in production use for almost 4 years. But at the same time, there's no substitute for getting something into people's hands and having people be able to gauge for themselves whether or not it's working, how well it is, and whether a product as complex as ours, which manages anything from commercial-grade middleware to every operating system to basically any technology you can mention, and you can check it out on our website, how could you possibly QA something like that, a product that's inherently designed for heterogeneous management? Devices are a great example of this. So Hyperic could not possibly buy every possible network device that Hyperic HQ is designed to manage. As such, you get the power of a community to not only be able to verify the quality of the product, but also to extend it. And that's where the plugin, and it kind of folds into the second part of this, which is the whole code contribution element of it. Management software is in a unique position in that it has to face the challenge of adjusting to whatever people happen to be deploying in order to stay competitive, right? In order for a management product like ours to stay current, we have to be able to, if people are deploying Linux today, well, we want to work on Linux. If tomorrow it's, you know, Mac or whatever, well, it's got to work on OS X as well. And as part of that, creates a fundamental problem around how do you stay current with the number of different technologies that you could possibly support, both new technologies as well as maybe some old ones. And that's where a community is the only way to do it. Commercial vendors are, in a sense, hamstrung by the fact that they have to release completely new products to be able to account for new versions of software. They don't really have the power of a community that contributes back new plugins, if you will. And that's both a technical as well as a community type problem.
Talk about competing with Microsoft, which seems to be making moves towards open source, and I'm curious to know, do you think they're feeling some heat? Do you think that they're going to continue to sort of toe the line with the commercial aspect, or what do you think?
Well, interestingly enough, at least when it comes to management, I don't see that MOM and HQ are direct competitors. It's actually, you know, the customers that are most appealed to HyperX platform from a Microsoft standpoint have other non-Microsoft stuff in their environments, whether it's non-Microsoft applications like Apache Tomcat or MySQL or what have you deployed on the Windows operating system, or in addition to the Windows stack, they might have, you know, anything from Solaris to AIX to who knows what, right? And so those are, that's terrain that Microsoft as a non-management vendor couldn't possibly tackle. Whether it's open source or not, it's actually kind of a side question. So it's not as much of a competitive threat. I think if anything, we're giving Microsoft a reason to continue to be more management friendly, right? And it's actually ironic that Microsoft, or not ironic, but actually great, and Microsoft is one of the benefits, I guess, of their sort of monolithic approach to technology and the whole sort of tightness of their stack is that it's very manageable, more so even than a lot of other products, both commercial and open source.
How has going open source affected your posture about revealing the product roadmap? Did you come forth with that pretty freely before? Do you find more imperative to be more future talking in terms of having a product roadmap out there so people can view it and discuss it? You know, how does openness play when you're talking about where you're going in the future?
Interesting question. So ever since we started Hyperic, almost by necessity, we were basically five entrepreneurs who had taken this product out of a larger venture-funded company and kind of gone off on their own without anybody else's money to go and succeed on this. We felt that there was never an opportunity to succeed by being obtuse or obscure about our intentions or our long-term plans. In fact, we long before we open sourced a single line of code, we're always engaging with our customers and even people just evaluating our software about what was coming, what was good about our product, and so forth. So it's in a sense a bigger challenge to continue to disseminate that information rather than just whether or not we're interested in kind of keeping it to ourselves. Now, granted, we have some pretty interesting plans that it's useful in order to stay current and newsworthy to not just expose implicitly, but at the same time, it's a healthy balance, I guess, and something that we're pretty comfortable with.
What's your view on software as a service? Do you think that you'll have a software as a service offering at some point, or will that be something partners do, or what?
It's actually something partners do. So the product itself is designed to be multi-hosting or multi-tenant from the ground up. That's part of what the role-based access control gives us. So we already have relationships with a number of managed service providers, folks like US Internet Networking, et cetera, very, very large managed service providers, as well as actually local regional ones that deploy and deliver our product as a service to their customers. And also even some of our financial services customers are managed service organizations within these large financial institutions. So the technology can do it. The big question is whether the business is inclined to do it. And right now our answer is no. And the main reason for that is because it's actually very expensive to do that. For Hyperic to both deliver the product as a package solution as well as provide it as a service is a technical challenge, and I would argue the market is not looking for that. At least our customers would not be as attracted for a completely hosted solution as they would about a solution they can deploy within their network.
What about service-oriented architecture? Are you already geared up for that, or is that a future direction?
No, we're definitely geared for that. I mean, the product already manages a number of SOA-oriented products. We have some work we're doing very interestingly with MuleSource, the company that's recently or about to launch, I guess, around the Mule Enterprise Service Bus, where we have full management support for that and some very interesting developments there that you'll see in the news soon. And in general, as far as Hyperic's own internal technology, the SOA model, I guess, was actually something that we built the product with from the very beginning. We make heavy use of asynchronous messaging and XML-driven communication paths, et cetera, which are in some cases the building blocks for SOA-oriented solutions, I guess. So we're right in the middle of it, I guess.
Do you run on all the major open source platforms as well as Windows?
Absolutely. We run on every operating system, Linux, FreeBSD, Mac OS X, AIX, Solaris, HPUX, and Windows. I hope I got them all. I think I got them all.
What's been the most surprising thing so far about going open source?
That's an interesting question too. I think the most surprising thing is people, what people find interesting about the product and how people kind of draw their own conclusions about what is appealing to them. This is a product that is designed to meet a number of different people's needs, right? Whether you're a Windows user or a Unix user or whatever. And so when you see a common thread emerge from the feedback that you're getting, which in our case has been, wow, this product is very easy to deploy despite the fact that it's a very powerful solution, and those two things generally don't go very well together, that's probably been the most surprising thing, is that what we thought was the key element of our success, which is our rapid deployment, is something that the community, without us messaging too heavily around that, has brought back to us directly.
Do you find more pressure on the company to support more open standards now that you're supporting open source?
Sure, but we've always been eager to do that. I mean, one of the things that we knew as a premise from the beginning, having been the chief architect of the product at when its first design was made, was that we couldn't make any assumption about any of the things that we were managing. And so that meant that if a particular product supports an open standard, whether it's SNMP or JMX or whatever the standard might be, that we had to be prepared to adjust to that. And so that means that, and that's actually one of the main reasons why our architecture is frankly cool. We don't impose our own standards agenda on anybody's environment or on anybody else's technology. Windows, we manage through the Windows perflib interfaces. JBoss, we manage through JMX. Cisco routers, we manage through SNMP. And all that is sufficiently abstracted so that we're actually inherently more open than anybody else.
Do you have venture funding now?
Yes, we do. Actually, in May of this year, we raised venture capital from Excel Partners and Benchmark Capital.
Was the fact that you were going to go open source a factor?
Definitely. We raised money from Excel and Benchmark specifically because they were two investors with deep experience in building open source companies, namely JBoss, MySQL, and Red Hat. We felt that this process of taking an existing piece of intellectual property and opening it up for community adoption and so forth is something that requires, especially when the company already had customers and traction, requires a pretty, an investment in capital and in people, and we wanted to grow it and figure out how to do it the right way.
Is your bug list public?
Absolutely. It's at jira.hyperic.com.
And was it public before the open source decision?
It actually wasn't, but I think that was more of a factor of whether or not we weren't using Jira before then. We were using Bugzilla, and Bugzilla is just kind of a gnarly bug tracking system. I worked at Netscape, so I have nothing but nostalgia for Bugzilla, but Jira is far better.
Who sets the pace as far as releases? Do you have a regular rhythm, releases twice a year, or how does that work?
It's actually set mostly for the enterprise product, the release schedule is determined both by our customers as well as by the delivery of specific features. We actually do more about like four substantial releases a year, and then point releases throughout the year at various points. The product is put together in such a way that we can rev it rather quickly, with customers being able to stay on whatever particular version they actually are comfortable with. When you have an architecture like ours where you have all these different plugins, it might be a fix for a particular plugin that a customer might need to gain access for. That fix gets delivered to that customer as the standalone plugin, but then we roll that fix into an updated point release that gets put on our website so that incrementally the product just gets better and better. That pace might slow down a little bit more, but at the end of the day, it's about being able to deliver functionality and product as quickly as you can.
Is there a difference between your enterprise product and other product you offer?
Definitely, yeah. So the open source platform delivers inventory auto-discovery, monitoring, and a multi-user portal. The enterprise subscription includes a series of features, namely event management, which deals with log tracking, configuration tracking, and security, as well as remote resource control, the ability to start and stop and vacuum Postgres tables and do that kind of stuff. As well as a number of problem analysis and other alerting enhancements and role-based access control. So enterprise features plus support are what are packaged as part of the HQ Enterprise subscription.
So those extras in the Enterprise Edition are proprietary? I'm trying to understand how it works.
They're not open source, at least not right now. They're part of a you know, the sort of commercial element of our product.
Okay, and so that's licensed as any commercial product would be licensed.
Yeah, it's licensed as part of a subscription license. That is what any of our paying customers get. Of course, it is built on top of the same foundation, so you can think of these things as just pieces that fall or fit rather nicely on top of the HQ platform.
Well, thanks for speaking with me today, Javier.
My pleasure, Scott.
This is Scott Mace for Opening Move. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Opening Move with Scott Mace.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Paul Figiani. Our website editor was Scott Mace. The series producer is Joel Cherney.
This is Phil Windley. I hope you'll join me next time for another episode of Opening Move here on IT Conversations.